Hello and welcome to another edition of Conversations with Community Managers. My name is Jim Storer and I'm one of the co-founders of the Community Roundtable. I am joined today by my capable co-host, Shannon Abram. Shannon.
Hi, Jim. We are so excited to be here for another edition of Conversations with Community Managers. And today we are joined by a longtime friend of the CR, Vanessa DeMauro. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
Hi. We're so excited you're here with us. Could you kick things off by just introducing yourself, telling us a little bit about you and where you work?
Absolutely. So my name is Vanessa DeMauro, and I run community at Georgian Partners, which is Canada's largest growth equity firm. And I have about 20, and I'm going to mumble, years in community building experience. I used to, both as CEO of Leader Networks, a community builder myself, and doing quite a bit of research on the topic over the years, too. So,
yeah, it's really interesting, Vanessa. Before we got started, I was trying to think back to when I first met you, and I think it's back late 90s even, where we may have first started talking about community, and that's so been around the block a little bit, huh?
Yeah, I still actually rely on a couple of the tricks and tips that you taught me, Jim. So.
Oh, come on. Well, so we'd like to kick it off. So we saw a post that you wrote on LinkedIn recently, and we wanted to kick it off to talk a little bit about the idea that companies need to view trust as a competitive differentiator. Can you talk a little bit about how you think companies can leverage community programs, which we all know are kind of grounded in this trust aspect. And tell us a little bit more about how you see communities building and maintaining trust.
Absolutely. Now, that's a fascinating question. And I've been thinking a lot about trust these days. You know, it's a very important aspect of the work that we do at Georgian because we invest a lot in organizations that use AI and machine learning as part of their software platforms. So for that reason, trust is utterly essential because an organization, especially in the space of AI and machine learning, that isn't careful with company data, with personal PII, with how they treat and manage the information that they have about the organizations and the individuals they work with, especially in an AI world where there's bias, there's data leaks, there's cybersecurity issues, and the list goes on and on. So because of Georgian's focus on trust and manifesting trust in the community is a paramount concern to us because it's so important that in all that we do, the firm walks the walk and talks the talk. So what I'm running at Georgian Partners is a private gated community for the companies that are in the portfolio that Georgian Partners has invested in. So the basic idea is that after these companies take investment from Georgian Partners, one of the ways that they can grow and accelerate, and they're always late stage, high growth companies. So these are, you know, men and women organizations that are growing at enormous rates, you know, from hiring to growing their software to integrating AI and ML. So they face problems every day, problems of, you know, and opportunities of great magnitude because time is of essence and, you know, they're speeding down the highway while trying to change the tires. So the community that I've built or in the process of building, we're about 9 months old. And as we know, the community builders work is never done. The goal of this community is to enable the companies, the executives and their staff to share information about the work that they're doing to help each other accelerate. While an investment firm offers enormous support to the organization, there's also, you know, nothing like the person sitting right next to you who just did that, who can save you some steps. So with that backdrop, getting back to trust. So, you know, we check the box by saying, okay, it's a private gated community. Naturally, that has some element of trustworthiness because everyone in the community knows or is familiar with the other companies because they're part of the portfolio. But one of the most, I think, interesting, this was actually a blast to do. I've never faced this puzzle in my 20 mumble years of doing this, is how do I design an environment where everyone feels safe and secure in ways that they're able to share really confidential information. So there was a couple of things, and we have no competitors in there, so that's one big asset, but there are a couple of things that I did out of the gate to engender trust building that was both technical and social, because we know social plus technical usually makes a really powerful equation. So one of the first acts I do, and I'm just going to give you a few examples just to awake the imagination, but our terms and conditions, that was the most exciting and expensive legal document I have ever had commissioned in my life, because we needed the terms and conditions not just to protect the sponsoring organization, but also to protect the members and hold them accountable to each other. Basically, a legal version of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And not only did I have the lawyers draw up these contracts, the terms and conditions, but I also leveraged the legal officers, the CEOs, and the cybersecurity experts, or the CISOs, at many of our firms to help review the contracts, review the terms and conditions to make sure that everyone felt safe and secure in this environment. And, you know, a document is a document is a document, but the fact that I engaged so many of the users or the people who will be clicking, I accept, in the creation of this document was an enormous trust building activity because they had a say in it. We gave them agency, if you will. A couple other trust building activities that we do. I had a devil of a time finding a software solution that had two-factor authentication enabled. The one that we chose, and we can talk about Telligent later, that was a prerequisite from the organization that we could have a package, a software solution that stored personal information the right way, that enabled single sign-on and had all of those, you know, gated properties. And then another area, and so we did a lot of technical things to protect the user base and the information that we store. And then on the social aspect, there's a number of things that I've been doing to help enable the trust between the executives. When you ask, you know, 3, 5, 40 CFOs to take us through the numbers on their growth trajectory or their board decks, you know, that's a big step. That's an anxiety-producing but hugely enriching kind of activity. So a couple of the things that we did was, the first one is we made sure that there were no partners, no one in their board is in any of the working groups, because the executives need to manage their communications the way they see fit. So they often leverage each other for thinking through puzzles because they are in a safe space. I'm allowed in there, but also I have a agreement with them that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas unless, you know, something really anomalous happens. We also, I've done a lot as well too with just face-to-face meetings. While I'm not a huge fan of, you know, community equals 10,000 events, there is some value in seeing each other. So we leverage Zoom, you know, the video conferencing. We have occasional meetups. And we do a lot where, of course, we put the members at the center. They're the knowledge experts, and we empower them or create a platform. We don't empower them. They're empowered by themselves with the knowledge they have, but we create a concept where we can bring to life the stuff they know, and they can get feedback, thoughts, and ideas in really practical ways in the moment. So those are just some examples of how trust is playing out on a technical, platform, philosophical, and human-human way.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack, but you definitely got me thinking about a few things. And first of all, I want to say, you know, you get like a gold star for having, you know, 12 to 24 lawyers all reviewing the same document. I can't believe you got out of it alive.
Right.
That must have been a lot of fun. The next thing that you talked about that really struck me is, so George and Partners is sponsoring this community, right? They're the ones that are building it for their portfolio companies. The fact that you were able to convince the partners that it was a good idea, that they shouldn't be in the community, and then you're able to convince the portfolio companies that the community is a safe space, that's just a really interesting negotiation that must have gone on, because I totally understand that the portfolio companies need to have a space where they can have peer dialogue, but there's probably a pretty compelling interest in the partners who are board members on those communities to kind of see some of the engagement that's going on. And I just wonder, was that hard to reconcile, hard to negotiate within the company?
That's a funny question. So the partners can see the content. We have all exclusive content, and there are some public chatter areas, a resource library, that kind of stuff. But in the private executive working groups themselves, there are none. And that actually wasn't as hard a sell as I thought it was going to be. I actually, you know, that was going to be a decision maker for me on whether I was going to, you know, get on this train or not. And I remember the meeting. I said, and another thing, you know, we were having a brainstorming meeting, you know, I was thinking, you know, that it might not be a great idea if this, that, and the other thing, if you guys have access and have eyes on the executives. And I had done my research to study how a lot of the other venture capital and investment capital firms were running community. And basically that's how it rolled, right? The partners stayed quiet, just watched stuff and sort of, you know, mind what happened or what was discussed. So yeah. I sort of brought it up casually and held my breath and sort of explained why it wasn't a great, wasn't a great idea to have them mucking about. And they looked at each other and they played around with the idea a little bit, but at the end of the day, you know, they respect their entrepreneurs. They respect their companies so much that they felt this was their right, and they were going to be collaborating with or without the platform or with or without the community. So at least, you know, we can do it in a productive way. So it was okay, obviously, because I'm there, but I did hold my breath, and yeah, that hive on the back was starting as I was waiting for the answer.
So that's fascinating. The other idea that you brought up is the concept of creating engagement outside the community, whether it's through Zoom or maybe face-to-face interactions and things like that. And I just wonder how you're thinking about tying those back into engagement or ROI for your community, because obviously those are some really high value activities, but sometimes it's hard to track those and make sure that you feed those back into your model.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the metrics for this community, I'm really quite proud of. It actually was a moment of truth for me, right? Because I've written the books and the papers on metrics for communities and things like that, but it'd been a while since I had built one. I crowdsourced a lot of those data through research. But now that moment came when I had to put forth my operating metrics for the community, which is truly being considered and treated as a line of business. And what was I going to put my neck out there for, to be accountable for? So it was actually a fascinating experience, because all the different divisions had to come up with their operating metrics for the plan this year. And, you know, I brainstormed, I talked to a few folks and got some ideas, because we know that business metrics need to align with community metrics. And, you know, they were coming up with all those typical vanity metrics. Well, yeah, if it grows, if we see a lot of members using it, if we keep adding members, and, you know, speaking of moments of truth, I remember saying, okay, I can knock this one out of the park if I take these low-hanging fruit. But then the adult supervision in me said, no, Vanessa, you've got to do it right. Like, darn, I hate when that, you know, good angel talks to the bad angel. on my shoulder, because I could have just like taken their, you know, vanity metrics and ran for the hills and knocked everyone out. So what I wound up doing for community metrics in this case is I aligned it to some of the three most important things that are core to the business. Now, the first one on solving problems. So how do we accelerate knowledge sharing among the portfolio companies? So I track, right now it's manual, but naturally I'm looking at developing, you know, automation for some of this. We track problems solved in a very holistic way. I don't care how the problem gets solved, if it happens among the people. So I'll track introductions. I'll track problems surfaced and solved in the platform. I'll also track attendees and questions to the webinars. Did you get your question answered? And so that is one, because that's a way of showing progress with problem solutioning. Now, next year, I'm going to be developing an ROI model to affiliate the value and the financial model affiliated with each major work stream of problem solved. The second one is one that we all know and love in community, which is reuse, right? Can we scale knowledge in a way that reduces burden on people? So I'm starting to track utilization of subject matter experts and seeing that normal arc where at the beginning it's really high. And then as we start to codify and document a lot of their best practices and bring them on to the community, we're seeing the number of basic questions and basic interventions going down. And the company was great. They rode out that spike for a while. People complained like, oh my gosh, make them stop asking me questions. But we did reach tipping point where now we have a nice solid base of reusable content. So by the time a SME gets tapped, you know, it's a more sophisticated question. And then the third major thing, which is core to the business, and that's unique probably to venture world, I'm sure, although it could be extended to, you know, client referrals and things like that, is we survive on access to the best deals, finding those hot companies that are growing enormously and you know, getting in a situation where they'll take investment from us. So I have a metric, which I haven't completed yet. I've got, you know, 6 more weeks to go, but I'm halfway there on referrals from my community members who love Georgian and the community so much that they're willing to introduce a peer or another company to us for due diligence. So that's advocacy, you know, no matter how you spin it, customer advocacy models.
Right, that's interesting. Wow.
So I want to sort of, I had a question and then you kept going and I was super interested, but I want to back up a little bit where, you know, you had mentioned that security is a really big deal, not just because, you know, it's not that your competitors are here, but that your data is in a safe place, the technology you're using is safe, and you mentioned two-factor
authentication. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have recommendations on how organizations can use the technology? So, you know, that two-factor being one thing, but are there other ways you're using the technology platform to make people feel safe and make them feel comfortable sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're really in a new era of trust. So trust and transparency is really paramount. You know, it goes from everything from the data privacy to even the business models themselves being really essential. So, you know, how that can play out again in community is, you know, do what you say you're going to do. And I'll always be upfront. Like, for example, I just ran a survey around customer satisfaction I just ran an event and I had a community event and we had a couple hundred executives there. So I took in the feedback and they took the time to take that survey and I'm going to give them back those data, right? It's anonymous, but I have the aggregate information. You know, I'm forever balancing, and it's so important in the community now to always balance that give and get model in so many different ways. You know, if they store information on the site, or they upload, you know, confidential documents or things that even they consider to be sensitive. You know, they have takedown rights and edit rights. You know, gone are the days where only the community manager has the right to edit the content and move it around and things like that. They have a right to edit their own words, traceably, of course, where it has to say edited by or whatever the tool is, you know, however it gets marked. You know, it's all those types of aspects of fairness and transparency that need to be built in as you design the community.
That's really interesting. We get a lot of complaints from people about how they just can't get people to do anything in the beginning, maybe. Like maybe you join a community and you lurk for a long time, or to give your members that level of control over their data and control over their postings. Does onboarding look different from other communities for you guys because you're giving them more power?
Yeah, very much so. And there are a couple of hairs I'd like to split. I definitely wouldn't, putting on my consultant hat, this is not a model that would work for a large enterprise, right? You can't give 30 to 50,000 people edit rights. That's just dangerous. And while it might be an act of trust, it's also an act of suicide, right? Because it's just bad things are going to happen. People are going to make mistakes. I have a small community. There's, you know, at full scope, because we have a finite number of companies, never going to exceed 6,000 or 7,000 people. So that is a luxury I can afford because of the size and accountability of our members. I know everyone in there because Georgian has a stake in each of their companies. So there's a level of sort of watchfulness that every member will have in a construct like mine that is not present in more public communities or customer communities. But in terms of the onboarding, yes, you know, all the groups in this smaller gated community, you know, they get to know each other before we even launch the online space. We have a kickoff call, an orientation call. I have advisors for every major group. So there's that heightened accountability and familiarity that helps. They get a welcome kit, and they definitely get a tutorial on how to use the community. And, you know, how to make changes to their content and, you know, basic functions. So, yeah, we do have to do a bit more training and make the how-tos more transparent throughout the site as well.
So, Vanessa, earlier when you were talking about the launch of the community, you mentioned that you're using Telligent. Could you tell us a little bit just about your experience using them in building the community?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was very interesting because when I was starting, you know, I know all the vendors or many of the vendors incredibly well because at Leader Network, so many of our, we're vendor neutral. So a lot of our clients, you know, went through the process of selecting vendors over the, you know, 10, 12 years I was running Leader Networks. And so when it came time for me to pick my own vendor, for Georgian Partners, you know, while I had some basic instincts, I again decided to eat my own dog food and said, okay, let's use the, you know, Leader Networks method. And I went through all the tedious steps that, you know, we suggested to all our clients, here's the develop your business requirements, develop your checklist, weight your checklist, you know, all these different steps to lead to a vendor process. And, you know, while Telligent was on the list, I was actually surprised that they came out on top. They weren't the ones that my gut was telling me was the right one, but they emerged very strongly aligned with our business goals and needs. And part of that reason is because they're highly extensible and I have some really unique case studies and use cases. So I needed that level of control that Telligent can bring, where I could tweak widgets and basically do things best to my specifications in the community. And it's a really great experience so far. You know, the support has been tremendous, and we use Social Edge to help build that community. They were the development partner that created the community to our specs. So you know, it's been a really good experience, and I'm really glad I made the choice. They're really great.
That's great to hear. I know, you know, we're platform neutral as well, but know all the vendors in the space, and I really like the guys over at Verint and Telligent. So, yeah, that's good stuff. Shannon, I think you have our wrap-up question.
I have our very last question, Vanessa. We always ask the same question, and it's my favorite question. What is your community superpower?
Process. I'm a process wonk through and through. You know, having a community again after, you know, a number of years not having it, I'm just, you know, as all of us are, overwhelmed with the amount of work there is to do. It's a never-ending tide of accountability, responsibility, and yet one more member needs one more thing. And the only way I'm able to manage through this gleefully and providing full service to my many members is to define repeatable processes from onboarding to outreach to you know, everything in between. And, you know, I experiment with different models to get the right one or three, but then I create cycles where I can, you know, genuinely and in a personalized way, move the groups through the different turnstiles and experiences with consistency.
I was on mute. That's a great answer. I think so many people come into community and they're like, it's squishy, it's feely, it's about making people feel good. And it's like, yeah, but also having a process, sticking to that process, being someone who understands that is super important. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that great Southern saying, honey, sometimes you got to go slow to go fast. And, you know, in starting up this community, it was killing me. Like, I just wanted to get started, but instead I was making, you know, spreadsheets and template decks and onboarding. But I'll tell you, I'm so glad that I did. And I've done so with, you know, clients in the past, but this is the right way to go because, you know, as we say in community, you know, the day that, you know, unlike software where, you know, the day you launch your software, everyone is taking a conference room and gets to go home. The day you launch the community is the day you like grow up a little bit because the real work is coming and coming fast.
So. No, you're right. We give that advice all the time that we'll talk to people and they'll be like, well, my boss just wants us to do it. So like we need to start and we have to tap. I have all the members in there and people engaging. And we're like, oh, that's not how it works. Like, it's just not. So that's fantastic advice.
Yeah. My mantra these days is do less better.
Oh, I like that. I feel like that might need to be my personal mantra. I like that a lot.
Yeah. No, but you can't undo a sloppy whatever or a misstep. And mistakes are excruciatingly time consuming, right? Like you got to fix it, then you got to beat yourself up, and then you got to hide, and then you got to face it. You know, so making fewer mistakes takes a lot less time than screwing up a lot. I speak from experience, so.
I feel like I might be in therapy right now. This is great.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I really appreciate hearing your perspective on this and on this kind of community. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you. You know, the community roundtable is fabulous. You guys have been around forever. I can't even count the thousands of community builders you have served and served well. So it's truly an honor to be on this podcast today. So thank you.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Conversations with Community Managers from the Community Roundtable. We'll see you next time.